The glitz, the glamour, the celebrations. It could only mean one thing. Welcome to the biggest night in showbiz. Welcome to the bit. What, sir? They've been postponed. Because Biggie's decided to fuck off to the Oscars instead. Right. Oh, and Oodles isn't here either because he's hungover from winning all those Razzies. Right, okay. Fine. I guess we'll just do a normal lame episode then. Ladies and gentlemen, and variations thereupon, this is Modern Escapism. Hello everyone and welcome to another week of news, reviews and general bullshit. My name is Stig and I'll be steering the ship this week because as you've heard, Oodles and Biggie are not here.
But we've both fear got not. The shifts.
Yes. Because joining me is the Reverend Mother herself. It's Candy Machine.
Oh, I can't do a good Bene Gesserit voice. Do it.
Hello.
And joining myself and Candy is the Padishah Emperor Gadget, the 8th of Bit.
No, I'm not doing a Walken. I can't do a Walken. That'll just embarrass myself, but yes, hello.
And to fill in the gap, we have drafted in a special guest, a Fremen rebel fighter ready to take down the establishment if ever I saw one. From What the Fuck Do You Want, Filthy's Ring Stings, and Pure Dead Xbox, it's Deadbeat Punk.
Up the biggies!
I think we're going to have to start calling you Mr. Podcast Worldwide now.
The amount of podcasts I'm starting to spread myself out there, yeah.
You're on more than plenty these days.
Mm-hmm. That's disgusting to think about. And I don't even like talking that much.
But you're so good at it.
Oh, why, thank you.
Right,
I wasn't going to return the compliment, no.
No. It's fine.
I know.
80% of the world can't understand a word I say anyway, so it's fine.
Getting that, yeah.
Book, Luke, Took.
Hey, did you know that I live close to the coast?
You're all English, you sound the same.
Yeah, so we were going to do the biggies, and then...
Yeah, it's all excited. I thought I got invited to the big show.
Yeah.
So I can pick up the one that I won, that still hasn't appeared. Biggie, prick.
Biggie on that one. Must have got lost in the post. Unfortunately, through illnesses and whatnot, it ain't happening this week. So yeah.
Ebola.
I got a new dress and everything.
Well, you look fantastic.
Thanks.
Certainly wasn't wasted.
How's everyone? You all right? Everyone all good?
Yeah, grand.
All right.
Absolutely
been
grand.
All right. Been all right
Magic,
week.
Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you very much for coming on, Punk. And I guess we'll head...
Pleasure.
I guess we'll get into it, and I want to hear some news.
You want to hear some news? You want to hear some fucking news?
Get that news into me.
You may already know, but he doesn't, because it's time for Biggie's Breaking News.
I've read, and I've read even more. I've found all the scoops, but I can't recall what for. I've postulated, made some notes in hopes of some success. The inevitable fact is that it never will impress. I've so much news to give, this Biggie's gone away. It's down to me to read the news, so here I am today. I've all the news to give, though more news I've tried to get. I'm over my news budget and I'm now in fucking debt.
Wow. A plus for effort.
That was beautiful. Well done.
I'm glad
We're
you enjoyed
not
that.
Worthy. We're not worthy.
I'm just really just trying to show a Biggie so that next time he has to try and put some fucking effort into it.
Comes out with a keyboard.
Can Biggie even play an instrument, do you think?
No, he can't.
I see him as a trombone.
I heard he's quite good with his organ.
Yes. Whee! Yes, I have heard this.
He'll call up the spoons, won't he?
I just want to see the one-man band set up.
Right.
Well, he has to up his game now,
yep.
Certainly.
So, news. Yes, news. That's the thing I'm doing right now. First on in gaming, we're recording this on the 10th of March, so that means it's Mario Day. according to Nintendo, because they want to do things with a backward date. So yeah, Mar 10-day news. They've confirmed a new Mario movie in the works to the surprise of absolutely nobody, because the first one did that well.
They've said, though, that they're going to take on a more hands-on approach with Illumination this time around, which is interesting.
I think they might actually put a story into it rather than just a series of set pieces.
I think that's what it is, because as much as I enjoyed that film, purely based on the way it looks and all the references, there ain't a story there.
No, it's not one for the civilians. Like, I watched it with Pip and I got all the references and she was bored for it.
Because she very much test in the water with that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, we've The Legend of Zelda and everything in the pipeline.
Yeah. But then when you compare to like the Sonic movie, there was actually a narrative to that one.
Mm.
So
Sonic needed it.
It did. They also confirmed Dr. Mario, Mario Golf and Mario Tennis for the Game Boy are coming to the Switch Online. On the 12th, I think, on the 12th of April. The Paper Mario remake releases on May the 23rd, so that's the Thousand Year Door one, I think. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
It is, yep.
And Luigi's Mansion 2 HD releases on June the 27th. That one I'll play. I've only ever played Luigi's Mansion 3, and I really enjoyed it, and I've heard 2 is great.
Yeah, 2 came out on the 3DS. It was good, but it was a handheld game. If we remember what those were like.
No. Handheld? Never.
I've got it on the 3DS, but I've never played it. Mm. I put it on there for Amelia, and I never got around to playing it. I did try after the third one, but it felt like a bit of a step backwards.
Yeah, it would have been definitely more of a budget behind the third one.
Mm-hmm. But I'll play Paper Mario. I really enjoyed the recent one.
One is proper turn-based combat. Mm. This, instead of the Origami King, had that strange puzzle system. Yeah,
yeah. I got on with about half the time with it. Sometimes
the writing is good.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, they kept that going. Bobby,
That's what I enjoyed a lot about the Origami King one was the writing was great.
Yeah, the references and everything in the Paper Mario series. Just brilliant, and the GameCube one was probably the best of the lot. I liked the N64 one, probably because it was the one that was first, but GameCube one was excellent. I'm looking forward to getting on Mario Golf. I love that one.
The
Camelot RPG?
Oh yeah. The new Mario Golf was supposed to be a bit weak though, wasn't it?
Yeah, they kind of took everything out and it's
and sold very it back to
shallow.
You.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of selling things back to you, ever the brilliant businessman and 100% top boys of the gaming industry, Warner Brothers Games says the company plans to focus more on live service, mobile, and free-to-play games.
Oh, brilliant.
Following the stellar success of Suicide Squad.
This thing, Hogwarts Squad coming next, Harry Potter's dead, but you play as all his classmates that caught about a page or two in the series. This would be brilliant.
Well, they single out 4 franchises they're going to concentrate on, which are Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, the DC Universe, and Mortal Kombat. So, you know, expect Harry Potter Battle Royale, I guess.
God, Westeros Cart. Cool.
Do we still have that Quidditch game in the pipeline?
I don't know, actually. I don't think so. No one's said anything about it for a long time. Yeah. And speaking of WB Games and their stellar business practices, they appear to have killed off Adult Swim Games, which they own, and are actively delisting the entire back catalogue of games. Which
it's
is
all digital future.
Shitty.
Yum yum.
Yeah, so this includes games like Rick and Morty Virtual Reality, Rain World, which is fucking banging, Death's Gambit, which was really well reviewed, Samurai Jack Battle Through Time, which did well, Headlander, which is a Double Fine game. Which did really well as well. Jazz Punk and what's the other one that I'd seen? Westerado Double Barreled, which is a shooting game, like indie shooting game. Absolutely shitty. And the thing is, the devs found out when their Steam logins wouldn't work, when they couldn't like do anything.
Oh wow.
Warner Brothers didn't tell them anything about it. It was no pre-warning or anything like that. And most of these games don't seem to have license issues. It's not like there's like licensed music in them that they can't use anymore.
Because I've seen a few developers on social media saying they've managed to get their rights back ahead of this.
Yeah.
But it seems like anybody trying to get their rights back now are running into problems.
Yeah, and Warner Brothers' kind of official take on it is that they don't have the manpower or will to actually put someone behind moving the license over. Apparently it's easy, really easy to do on Steam, but for anything that's multi-platform, so anything that's on the PlayStation and the Xbox, apparently that gets more complicated, and as a result, Warner Brothers don't want to commit any money to that. So, you know, top blokes over there, top blokes, like really, really nice, consumer-friendly people.
This just sounds like hard work. No, this is not what we're about at all.
Well, well, they're Warner Brothers, parent company of Rooster Teeth, aren't they?
Yeah. Who were also closed down this week, causing a few hundred job losses, but also kind of the loss of some legendary series. Like the one that always stuck out to me was Red versus Blue. That was like a really super early internet thing for me.
Yeah.
And like the first time I'd seen like a web series, or like it was the creator of the Machinima style of making videos within games. I mean, there's still some of those episodes I find so funny, and I'll go back and rewatch, even though they look janky as fuck because they're 20 years old.
It was the same with Flash Animation. It was the bare bones. It's like indie podcasting. It was the easiest way into animation.
Yeah. Because Warner Brothers owned Rooster Teeth, they owned the rights to everything, so everything's getting closed down, so all that talent is not going to be able to work on the stuff that they love to work on. They're all going to have to do something new, which, again, sucks. And again, them being told last minute about it. Like, I think about half the people at Rooster Teeth found out when the company announced it publicly rather than being told internally. Which is fucking awful.
I don't know what's going on with Warner Brothers this last couple of years, but they seem to be making a terrible decision after terrible decision.
I think Zaslav is trying to destroy the company from the inside.
Yeah, it's quite funny that the other week they came out and said that they're the only pure storytelling company in the movie industry, and it was like...
Release some films and tell us?
Yeah, is that when you're not deleting your films?
Yeah, it's one of those, like Warner Brothers were always kind of bad for things, like even like, you know, like if you're making YouTube videos on like the old Batman games, like they would just like claim, like copyright claim you instantly.
Yeah.
But ever since this merger with Discovery, that's just gotten worse and worse and worse. Like the content they're putting out is getting worse, but then also they're killing off the good content, and they've got no time for legacy content either. Like stuff that's already out there that can still just make passive money. Like, you don't have to do anything to keep Rain World going. It's a single player game, you know.
But even things like they were trying to remove shows from streaming services. What was it, late last year?
Yeah, they were as well. Can't remember what they were trying to
remove.
And
then of course they were trying to sell the gaming division off for the longest time, but nobody was picking it up.
No, and then, you know, the games that are coming out now, so obviously Suicide Squad has, like, no players now.
Shut the bed entirely.
What's the Steam charts on it?
this is always fun.
Bet it's about 400.
So 24-hour peak, 1,062.
Wow.
All-time peak, 13,450. I know it was marketed heavily towards the consoles, but even then, that's... For a AAA live service game, that's shite.
You really should get a segment going and it's like, play your cards right, but for Steam numbers.
That's a good idea. The next game, actually.
Is it higher or lower?
Start with Helldivers. Everything's lower than that at the moment. Moving on, though, and one that I know that will tickle Punk's taint here. Sea of Thieves is currently the number one best-selling pre-order game on the PlayStation Store. Do you want to explain to people why that makes you so happy, Punk?
Yes, well, Sea of Thieves, as we all know, as we have heard, as anybody has been on any form of social media, is a load of shite. Pirate shite. Who would want to play that? Have you seen its Metacritic? Disgusting game. That's the Xbox quality right there. Belongs in the toilet. Of course, the little starving Sony boys get a little taste of it this year. Yum, 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 yum. Full whack for it while we Master Race Xbox boys get it for free on Game Pass. Oh, the good life. And they fucking lap it up.
Well, yes.
So, yeah, no, it's just the... It's been covered before. We love baiting fanboys. So
yeah.
It's nice to see it do so well because nobody was going to buy this. Who wants the leftovers? Who wants the crumbs from the Xbox plate? Turns out quite a few people.
quite a few people.
And it's, and also, it's rare, so it's great to see them doing well.
Mm. Oh, yeah, everyone loves seeing Riot doing well. And also, it's kind of continuing this trend that we're getting this year with stuff like Helldivers as well, where these smaller kind of almost indie games are doing really well on the PlayStation, the consoles, but also outselling the AAA games. Because great as the tech is in Sea of Thieves and like the back-end service behind it and all that, it's still like a AA game. It's not the top tier of what Xbox has ever put out.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful graphics. I fucking love that. I just love bimbling around and looking at the water. It's so good in that game.
It's just a great game to hook up with friends in.
It's chaos.
Especially over lockdown. I think a lot of us jumped onto it during that.
Yeah, I did, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But it's really funny that the number one best-selling pre-order game on the PlayStation Store is an Xbox game. It's just, it's tickled me, that.
Rise of Ronin, Stellar Blade, just looking up, sadly. Top left corner.
Stellar Blade, everyone's looking up skirt.
There's no skirt to look up, it's just there, Stig.
I know. I've
seen the laziest perverts on the planet.
The pictures that have come out this weekend, my God.
Well, yes, because there was a demo came out for Stellar Blade, and actually that's just reminded me of a news story I meant to post in.
Mm-hmm.
PlayStation pulls the Stellar Blade demo off consoles after the RPG was accidentally made available.
Which I didn't realise they had the technology to do. Remove material from your console. I delisted, PT was delisted, but there's PS4s around the world that still have it saved on. It's going nowhere.
I think it's part of the more more connected technology behind the PS5. Like reach into your hard disk and pull shit out.
It's just with our previous story about things being delisted, could it be such a time where things are delisted and even if you have a saved copy? I mean, Scott Pilgrim, before it was delisted, I had it on the 360.
Yeah. It's
probably still on there. But when it was pulled from the stores, it was gone. Now, if it's pulled from the stores and it's gone and they can deactivate it on your console, so it's gone.
Yeah, so the story was saying the Stellar Blade demo was quietly added, then swiftly deleted from the store earlier today, with Sony redacting access for users who downloaded it. So I think they basically just took away the license key. So it's still on the console, but the license was taken away.
Yeah.
I don't like scrolling the news stories, but the screenshots still make us feel a bit ill.
Are you trying to say there's something off putting about a busty lady with a toddler's face? What's your problem?
It's a busty lady with a toddler's face and like 14-foot wide hips. Like she's impossibly proportioned. I thought we were past this in gaming.
Sounds hot. I'm into it.
When's Dead or Alive Volleyball coming back? I need that episode of Edge in my life again.
Oh, no. Another one that's making the Sony fans very unhappy at the minute. The Ghost of Tsushima's Director's Cut comes out on the PC on May the 16th, which has caused another round of consternation and a lot of people shouting on Twitter saying that this is a betrayal by Sony or some shit like that.
I'm going to have to stop you there. This is a false story.
Oh?
These are Steam fans making fake profiles, acting like outraged PlayStation fans to farm Steam points.
Oh, right. So it's a conspiracy.
Yes. They're just trying to make Sony fans talk about. There's this entire narrative against them. Those poor lads. Leave them alone.
So the PC version of Ghost of Tsushima includes the full game, the Iki Island expansion, and the cooperative online multiplayer Legends mode. It's been Nixxes has been working with Sucker Punch to use their in-house engine technology to PC and implement PC features such as unlocked frame rates and graphic settings and all that. One thing that makes me happy with it is ultra-wide monitor support, so you get a wider field of view and you can take in those gorgeous graphics.
I bet it's going to look stunning.
It's a beautiful game. Even just on the PS4, it was a beautiful game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just like being able to.
Same when Returnal made the jump. First thing you thought was ultra wide.
Yes, and it looks amazing in ultra wide. I have it on Steam as well, and it's so good. But yeah, a lot of the Sony fans have been a little bit upset with that. I say a lot of the Sony fans, it's like the really vocal minority that are just very, very fucking vocal.
My punching bags online, yeah.
who gives a shit? You've still got the ability to play it on your consoles, like,
no, it's been tainted. Can't play anymore.
But it's just that thing, they've got it a few years later. It's going to fund the developers that you love, that you really like their product, and it's going to fund the possible sequel and make it even better or land earlier.
Which will come out on the PlayStation and then come out on the PC 2 or 3 years down the line. So it's not like it's going to be, we're funding it for Xbox and PC. It's going to still be PlayStation.
They're not taking it out of your mouth to give it to somebody else.
Nah, they're just weird people.
Back to poor business decisions. EA hopes to use generative AI to drive modernization and make development 30% more efficient.
Good old AI.
Yeah, this is coming off the back of something 900 jobs went at EA this last couple of weeks. EA CEO Andrew Wilson discussed his plans for generative AI, including making development more efficient and encouraging gamers to spend 10 to 20% more money on EA's games and more fun stuff. It's always nice when they say the quiet part out loud these days. Like, it's like he's not saying, like, hey, AI is going to make the games better for the audience. No, we want them to spend more money in our games.
Well, if it said on the front of a video game box, like, oh, this is partially made by AI, I'm not going to be like, here, take an extra 20 quid then. You deserve it.
I think it's possibly to use AI within games to, like, drive your behavior a bit more, like, get you to the store a bit more, like, to buy the microtransactions.
Oh, poo off.
During this conference, Wilson called the era of generative AI incredibly exciting, adding that Electronic Arts is embracing deeply the new technology. He also mentioned there are three pillars to the way he thinks about using generative AI: efficiency, expansion, and transformation. I hate this guy already. Speaking of efficiency, Wilson mentions that Electronic Arts' business involves an incredibly iterative development cycle, as pressing a button in a game doesn't need to trigger the desired effect, but it also needs to be fun. The desired effect is the fun result, my friend. So as a result, game development is incredibly time-consuming, and games now taking 6 and 7 years to build.
It is amazing just having non-creatives talking about AI as some form of magic.
Oh yeah, my work have been doing that. Like, I constantly get emails at work going, hey, join our generative AI conference. I'm like, no, you're just going to be saying a lot of buzzwords. Like, you don't understand.
These are the type of people that are like, talk to the coding team and like the developers and go, well, why can't you just make this section in AI and let it do that? That's what's in their head. They think that someone could just put, do this, do that, do that, do this, and AI will make that section of the game for them.
Those people that say, why don't you just make a Fortnite? Make a Fortnite and then get some of that Fortnite money. It's just not as easy as that. Press the Fortnite button.
This is a slight departure, but still on AI, there's a really kind of high-up tattoo convention that happens in the States every year. Mm-hmm. And one of the artists was offering like lessons to artists on how to use AI to further their career, and he's been absolutely ripped. Like, surely, like, the point of tattooing is the creative side of it, not to use AI to come up with designs for you.
For a consultation, and you just typed whatever they wanted into Bing.
Maybe
that's it. There's your tattoo.
Yeah,
I'm still
going to
charge
design.
You what I normally do.
Yeah,
I mean, you could go in if you're a customer. You could go in with some AI images and say something like this, but I'd like you to develop on it. And
exactly,
it.
That's
like,
that's completely
because
different.
When I've gone into my tattoo artist, I can't draw for shit, and I'm like, it's not like this, and my drawing is absolutely horrendous. So I have to let him try and figure it out.
That's why you go to a professional.
But, and these conferences cost like $200. Here's, pay $200 to learn how to use AI to rip a customer off. So it's just infiltrating everything.
But people like that don't get ripped enough. It's like they're getting abuse now. It's never enough.
Yeah.
Destroy them.
Also, I think the tattoo industry, there are a lot of shitheads in there.
Oh, big time. Me being one of them.
Well, yes.
The biggest shithead of all.
Moving on. 600 Activision quality assurance workers have just formed the biggest video game union in the US. As first reported by The Verge, 600 QA workers have formed a new union at the publisher. It was organized through the Communication Workers of America union. This surpasses the 300-person ZeniMax Workers United. But what is notable about this is Microsoft have just immediately acknowledged it.
Hmm.
Yeah. With their massive layoffs at the start of the year, none of the layoffs were part of a union. So it's really in people's interest to do so.
Yes. Good for them being able to just like hold Activision to account one of the shittiest companies in the world.
Because it sounds easy just to say, you know, everybody should unionize, but if it was that easy, I'm sure they all would.
Well, yeah, also American corporations do tend to specifically kind of crack down.
Mm. Yeah.
But there are sort of drawbacks to unionizing as well. Like, for example, you know, students straight out of college, whereas they might have a foot in, they're only going to pick the best of the best to work at these gaming companies, and there's going to be no new talent. And games are going to take even longer because there won't be quite such a crunch culture. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. I can't really see a solution other than the people at the top skimming all the money.
That was going to be my other point, because if you join a union, then you normally get paylocked afterwards. Mm. That's one of the main agreements across the board.
I think really what should happen is, yes, the workers unionize, but to possibly make the gaming industry better and to make like game development better, anyone at maybe like C level, just eject them from the company. You save a lot of money. You save a lot of bullshit. You don't have people like Andrew Wilson going out there going, AI, AI, AI. You know, it just seems to me like it's the board members that are the worst bits of the gaming industry. Yeah. Like
publishing, you know, marketing, all that buzz. Yeah. Cut it off, get rid of it.
Yeah.
The most expensive, flabbiest part of the company. Just
put it up on Steam. But also, just given the fact that there's been, what, nearly 10,000 layoffs and we're only in the middle of fucking March.
Yeah, actually, when you were on Pure Dead Xbox, we talked about the number. What was that, February?
In February, it was about 6,000, and there's been a lot more since then.
So the year before was over 10,000, and that was record-breaking. And I think we're knocking on the door of it, if not surpassing it now.
There's on a slight tangent, there's a podcast I just started listening to recently called Better Offline, and it's a tech journalist talking about the tech industry. And he did an episode on basically the concept of that the line has to go up and people are getting laid off in the tech industry, like gaming industry and all the tech industries. And the companies are still posting massive profits because at that level, money is made up. And they just, if they get rid of like 10,000 people, like if Microsoft like get rid of like 10,000 people, that makes their profit and loss sheet look higher for the quarter.
Oh, yeah.
And then the CEOs and the shareholders get big bonuses. And that's all it is. And it's like...
No coincidence, we had those massive layoffs at Microsoft around the time they announced they were a $1 trillion company.
Yeah. So, a worthwhile podcast to go listen to, but yes, I'm feeling very polemic about the whole situation.
Mm.
And I'm very much on the workers' side of this one. You know, let them unionize, eat the rich, all that kind of thing.
But the people that actually make the games, I'm on their side. They make the things I love. The publishers can lick various parts of me.
Yes. Yes, they can all get fucked. To use your parlance. On to film and TV. The viral Willy Wonka experience is becoming a horror movie. Because who didn't see that one coming?
What is it? It's the unknown.
The unknown. A horror film inspired by Willy Wonka has been announced after the attraction became a viral sensation. The unofficial...
How many porn parodies do you think there are right now?
There's got to be at least one already. The unofficial Willy's Chocolate Experience in Glasgow, that sounds like a porn film.
It does.
Captured the attention of many social media users over the past week, becoming infamous for its use of AI imagery in a promotion that didn't quite match the actual experience. I still love how wild the internet's gone on this one. Like, I sent one to Stig earlier. Someone's done like a D&D character sheet for the unknown as an enemy. So that's getting dropped in a scorched sheep at some point.
Do you think this was out, it's pretty much run by students, wasn't it, with the exception of the main guy that put it on? It was all college kids running the whole thing. Do you think it would be a help or a hindrance to say that you worked on that, because it's so like it's gone so viral at this point?
I think it depends on the job that you're going for afterwards. Like if you're going on for like some social media influencer kind of related job, they'd probably fucking love you for that.
Also, the girl that played the unknown, like I bet she could do a signing at Comic Cons and all sorts, you'd probably make a packet.
Probably, yeah.
Well, the Oompa Loompa, the crackhead Oompa Loompa one, the sad one, she's been doing cameos and interviews on TV and radio and everything.
What legends.
Strike while the iron's hot, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely, that's the way to do it.
Fucking hell. One that'll make Candy happy and Oodles cry into his Guinness hangover.
Yeah, I'm annoyed he's not here for this one. This is why I think he's really, really...
He's offended.
Like... Yeah.
Adam Sandler's Netflix hits make him Hollywood's best paid actor, says Forbes.
See, it's the kind eyes.
Sandler's success on Netflix, appearing in and producing three films for the streamer in 2023, contributed to his $73 million earnings that year. Last year, Sandler's lucrative relationship with Netflix also saw him write, produce, and voice the animation Leo, and appear and produce comedy You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah. That's a hell of a title for a film. This year, he's already starred in the sci-fi drama Spaceman, also on Netflix. There's no such thing as too much Sandler, the company said when renewing his deal following the success of 2019's original murder mystery.
Quite right.
His earnings were also boosted by 44 stand-up comedy dates last year, and this puts him above Barbie star Margot Robbie, who at 33 is the youngest person in the top 10 by a decade. Tom Cruise is third on the Forbes list with Margot Robbie's co-star Ryan Gosling, joined fourth with Matt Damon, and Sandler's murder mystery castmate Jennifer Aniston in sixth.
That's amazing.
How is Jennifer Aniston and Matt Damon that high?
Matt Damon I can kind of understand, but Jennifer Aniston?
I mean, does she get that much in residuals from Friends?
Up a lot.
She must get either get that, and also she must be getting paid a lot for the morning show.
Oh yeah, I suppose yeah. I constantly forget it. And she's done another movie recently with Owen Wilson, which I keep seeing advertised and looks utter shite. I can't even remember the title of it.
That's Matt Damon. The only thing I can remember Matt Damon being in is Oppenheimer, and he was just a side character.
Doesn't Matt Damon have a production company though?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, because him and Ben Affleck have a company where they write and produce things. So I suspect he's been doing a lot more behind the camera than.
Oh, he was in Air. Sorry, Air, didn't he? Yeah, Air was great.
Yeah. Next up, Zack Snyder continues to insist that The Batman That Won't Kill is irrelevant. The first sentence says it all. Speaking on Joe Rogan's podcast, Snyder noted, Batman can't kill his canon. And I'm like, okay, the first thing I want to do when you say that is I want to see what happens. And they go, well, don't put him in a situation where he has to kill someone. You're protecting your god in a weird way, right? You're making your god irrelevant if he can't be in that situation. He now has to deal with that. If he does do that, what does that mean? Snyder continued. What does it tell you? Does he stand up to it? Does he survive that as a god? As your god, can Batman survive that? He's not a fucking god. He's a bloke in a suit with daddy issues.
I was going to say Batman in a position where it would benefit him if he was to murder somebody is something they have done once or twice,
and it's usually ended up as a really dark story, even darker by Batman standards.
Like, he...
It really annoys me that Mario won't murder somebody.
All Zack Snyder's ever read is The Dark Knight. That is literally the only comic he's clearly ever read of Batman.
Yeah.
And... once again, he does, like, as I've said before, he doesn't know how to, he never knew how to handle Superman, doesn't know how to handle Batman, and this is evidence. And you go online and you see people trying to defend him, and one of the best ones was where someone posted a snippet from a comic where Batman does kill, and the actual artist and writer said, this is taken out of context because this is a dream sequence which I wrote and drew, and like this is like a nightmare for Batman.
Yeah.
This isn't even Batman. This is a dream sequence where he's having a nightmare. And the other time Batman killed is he handed himself in. Like, because he committed a crime.
Yeah.
Now, Keaton's Batman has killed. Let's not beat around the bush. In Batman Returns, he literally straps a bomb to someone, kicks them down a manhole, and they blow up off screen. but he kills a man. But Snyder's Batman... Right.
Didn't Snyder's Batman shoot a load of people?
Because he's running around with a fucking rifle.
Rubber bullets.
There's one situation where Batman is driven to kill in Batman versus Superman, and that's Superman. When he has Superman down, he's about to strike until
Martha's
mentioned. Then he changed his mind. That's the one. That's the only situation he's put in where he's at conflict. The other time... when he kills people, he just goes on a fucking rampage. That is not a situation. That's not like a clever situation. That's not Snyder going, oh, well, in this situation, Batman had to kill. No, I've seen Batman take down multiple men. I've done it myself in the games in this situation by being Batman, not by just ramming through the wall with his Batmobile and blowing everyone away. That's not how it works.
The way Batman does things is he doesn't kill anybody, but he does give them life-changing injuries.
Yes.
But they're not
dead.
They
deserve that. Exactly. They deserve to have, like, broken legs for what they did for being bad people.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's if you can put them in a situation where he's at a moral quandary where he might have to kill, and he even does kill on screen, fine, but present it in a way where it is literally the only thing that he can physically do.
You can present him killing someone if you're determined to follow that path of you either stay and be a hero or you live long enough to be the villain, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to go down that diverting path and you want him to become the villain at the end of it, then you can show him killing somebody, but it has to be the point that Batman's moral compass is on such a fucking knife edge all the time because the man's mentally deranged. If he has to kill someone, that has to be a tipping point for him.
Exactly. Yeah,
a good writer would not have that as the crescendo. It's not that he would kill somebody. It would be the aftermath. It would be the build-up.
Yeah.
The entire package.
Whereas Zack Snyder just had him blasting men away.
Slow-mo.
And then in Justice League, blasting aliens. I mean, is that any... I don't know, what's the... exactly, what's the moral grey area there? It's like, he's literally... I know the aliens are attacking Earth, but he still has Batman, like, literally ripping through them with bullets.
Yeah, but then again, he also wrote the line, so your superpower is... So what's your superpower? I'm rich.
I quite like that.
Makes me want to punch things every time I see it.
Quite like that.
Moving on to the Weird World Web. Oh God. What's he put in here? Woman takes dead hamster Spud on tour of Europe because he loved traveling. I feel like this one's going to be more sad than funny. But okay, let's see.
I put this in because it was a last minute thing, and I actually thought it was hilarious.
Okay. Just shot out of a cannon.
A woman has travelled more than 1,500 miles with her pet hamster's ashes to take him on a tour of his favourite places.
His favourite places?
Yeah, does he know? Did he go to Hamsterdam?
She's cremated his eyes. He's not going to know.
Lisa Murray Lang, 47, carried Spud in a vial on a necklace to some of Europe's most recognisable sites, including the Louvre and Buckingham Palace. She visited London, Paris, and Hamsterdam at the end of last year with Spud hanging around her neck. Lisa, from Birmingham, had made models of the cities for Spud to play in during COVID.
See, this is not sad, this is funny.
It's still sad. So she decided to take his ashes along in death and pose for photos in famous locations. It comes after she spent £3,500 and travelled 7,000 miles to scatter some of his ashes on a beach in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Oh, wow.
Lisa.
She just wanted to go on a holiday, didn't she?
Lisa, a dog walker. Where's a dog walker getting 3,500? No, I'm not even getting that. A dog walker said, "It's a nice warm feeling that we're still travelling together. I have a sense that he's still present on our adventures. Wherever we travelled, I made sure that his necklace was on view. The locket hangs so he's just above my heart. It's so comforting to know that he's with me all the time."
I hate to say it, but when you get a small pet, like a rodent, cremated at a vet, are you actually getting their ashes, or are you getting one of the 14 the hamsters that went in that day?
You're getting the ashtray from out the back.
You're getting the dust off the floor.
I was going to say, the more you talked about this, the more it started sounding like a Yakuza sub-story.
Well, especially when it got to Honolulu, yeah.
Yeah, it could be in there.
She was
or Spud.
Scattering a bit of ashes, and you've got Ichiban running in the background.
Rip Spud.
Yes.
Gone too soon.
Rest in peace, Spud. You're up there with the angels and Princess Di.
With the angles now.
Spud needs adding to that that meme of all the dead people with Harambe and that, doesn't he?
Just on the shoulder of Captain Tom.
Yeah. Captain Tom and Spud on their magical adventures.
And there's an episode title.
What's an XL bullies? Disposable fates, it's all coming together.
Whee!
Is that it for the news?
That's it for the news.
Excellent, thank you very much. Right, we're on to what we've been up to this week. Well, Punk, you're our guest. Why don't you start us off?
I'm just saying, if this was my show, we'd all be home by now.
10 minutes ago, actually.
We're already home.
Slow Good Horses. Has anybody been watching this?
I've seen the first episode of Slow Horses, and I don't know why I didn't go back to it, but I did really enjoy it. I like a bit of a greasy Gary Oldman.
Did not know that was Gary Oldman until the end of the first episode. Seen the name in the credits. Where the fuck was Gary Oldman? Holy mother of fuck.
He's doing
I did not recognize that man at all.
He's doing a lot of physical transformation roles, like his little cameo in Oppenheimer. Like, it took me ages. Mm-hmm. Took me to the end of that scene to go, that's Gary fucking Oldman.
I had no idea it was him until someone mentioned it in a podcast.
I don't even remember seeing him. I might be unaware of this.
He played Truman. He played President Truman.
Okay, yeah, no, I did know. Yeah. It took me a minute, though.
So, yeah, he plays Jackson Lamb in this series. Again, unrecognizable. From the man from Leon that shouted. Slow Horses is based in Slough House, but it's known as Slough House, and it's like the bottom rung of MI5, some spy agency. Whenever you fuck up, you end up in the Slough House.
Yeah.
And Jackson Lamb, Gary Oldman, apparently was shit hot back in the day, burned out in the field. That's why he's the head of this department. And everybody under his employ has fucked up in some way or another. And it revolves around Jack Loudon's River Cartwright, who was an up-and-coming spy, quite good at what he did, but fucked up an assignment, a practice one. And if it had been a real assignment, a lot of people would have died. And that sort of thing gets you knocked down these days in the spy service.
So I've heard.
Yeah, the troubles are well over. And it's one of those shows where you just, I know that face, I know that face, I know this face. It's got Jamie from the thick of it, except he's not screaming and threatening people with a hole punch or car keys.
Which, no, he's softened somewhat, hasn't he?
Yeah, I miss. I like that energy. But it starts off quite slow. God said, I think I got the first episode into me. It's been highly recommended by friends, and they say, no, you especially will like this. I say, not really feeling it. First episode is introductions. Second episode, stakes start to raise. There's a kidnap plot. It's a far-right group that have kidnapped a Muslim student, and they're going to behead him on the internet. And it's up to the agents to stop this from happening. Of course, it's 6 or 7 episodes. Nothing's that straightforward. It feels like an old spy novel, because it is a spy novel. From 2010,
I do remember when it first came out. There was a lot of people complaining about the idea that it was like an EDL kind of thing, being the baddie, you know, the usual types of people that would kick off about something post-pandemic.
Why? They can be baddies. They are baddies.
They're not baddies. Stop, they're British. Stereotyping racist, Stig.
Newsflash: white people can be bad.
White people can be racist too.
No, we're defending our country with our XL bullies.
So, yeah, I could see those complaints, but I would say anybody with those issues didn't finish the series because it goes into that.
Yeah, but I think also anyone with those complaints needs to shut the fuck up.
But everybody's entitled to their opinion, and if they weren't, I would have nothing to laugh at on Twitter.
Fair enough.
What's that on?
It's on Apple.
Apple Plus.
Fuck you, Stig.
I don't know if you mentioned it.
No, because I pirated it. I don't know where the fuck it is. I'm not buying another subscription.
It's on Apple TV Plus. So, yeah.
Oh, then I definitely did.
Just AI your voice and said, it's on Apple TV Plus.
Just pitch it up a bit.
It's just what I want to watch. Other people have said it's pretty good. So
I say I've got the second and third series. I think there's a fourth one out or coming out. I'd definitely be jumping on that.
Yeah, I've got a free subscription like to that. I think it runs like May, so I really need to get...
Give me your fucking password then.
Yeah, I need to get the use out of it.
So yeah, it's one of those ones I don't want to go into the story too much. It's nice. It envelops as you watch. Yeah. Cyberpunk finished it, Gadget.
Ah, fuck you.
Well covered on this show.
Yeah.
Let's say I was more negative than Gadget was last time.
Yeah. I think we agreed on a fair few things, but there was a few more things that pissed you off.
Yeah, I think it's a bad game at its core. I don't think it can be fixed. It feels like it's been pulled apart in 4 different directions and can't be put back together.
I think that probably was the case, kind of thing, because it was in development for like 8 years, but I think it was only in active development for like the last 2 years of that. It's
fucking Fallout 4 without the shed building. Get out of my sight.
See,
I
just cannot figure out whether I want to carry on and redo this game. Too many other stuff.
I'm I'm glad I seen it through to the end, just to say that I had, because it's one of those ones, if you hadn't, your opinion would have been moot.
Yeah.
I think, am I the only one left on this podcast not to finish it?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think
behind Biggie.
Maybe I should do just so I could talk about it on the podcast, because, you know,
it does need some coverage.
Talked about it enough, clearly.
I was going to start off in a rant, yeah. But I said, no, it's not worth the bit. Another one wanted to mention, I don't know if any of you are as big into Star Wars presently, but I have been watching The Bad Batch, the animated series.
I've not watched any of that. The only live action thing I haven't watched yet is Ahsoka. I still need to watch that, but I haven't watched any animated stuff.
I think Star Wars is my Marvel. I've managed to keep on top of it, so I'm still enjoying it. Whereas other people just look at it and go, where the fuck do you start with all this? So I didn't enjoy the new movies, and every single series just seems to be full time filling in plot holes for those.
Some of the TVs been good though, like the Andor I thought was great.
Oh, fantastic. But then again, if it wasn't attached to Star Wars, it still would have been a great show.
Yeah.
I mean, so the best Star Wars content tends to be something that's not connected with much of Star Wars.
Does seem to be a bit of a theme, yeah.
Yeah.
This one, without, again, I hate to do spoilers, there's a theme among them all, and I think they're all just working together, because there's bits of it in like the Obi-Wan show, Mandalorian, this, and they're trying to fix like the major plot holes in the movies.
I have heard this.
Yeah, I like they are straining at the bit just to fucking cover up the cracks in the wall.
Yeah, I saw it. It just basically, it came up on a TikTok. It just said, they were talking about The Bad Batch, and they said they really enjoyed this is the second season, right?
This is the third. The second third. One finished up, yeah.
So they said they enjoyed them, and they said the latest one just seems to be trying to fill in gaps regarding the latest trilogy and Palpatine. Yeah.
And if anybody's watched like the last Mandalorian series especially, there's connections with what happened at the end there. There seems to be an overarching thing that leads to the new villain. But for anybody that hasn't seen it, the Bad Batch are a bunch of clones, those lads from the prequels that fought with the Jedis until they didn't. They are the Bad Batch because they malfunctioned. So when the Order 66 came out, they basically ignored it. It did not affect them. And because of this...
What does Order 66 mean again? Don't know.
Which one's that? Pints? I believe so. So... they are put out. The Jedi don't trust them, of course. If they ever came across any, they wouldn't. Clones. Ugh. Murderers. But they're not part of the Empire, and the clones are starting to be phased out in this series, and it kind of shows the crossover between Clone Trooper and Stormtrooper and how they were treated and cast aside. So it's an interesting concept. They're just trying to find their way in the galaxy as a bunch of mercenaries, but they adopt a clone. Similar to Boba Fett. Boba Fett's one that it doesn't age quickly.
Right.
Whereas the clone soldiers, they're like 30 years old when they should be 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, war. So they're trying to look after this kid that is technically older than them. Very interesting. Very good. Love a bit of Star Wars.
If they're clones, mm-hmm. do they all look the same?
Well, they're all played by the same voice actor. He just puts different voices on, but it's a beard. They blame the Jedis for all their differences. So the Jedis give them like free will and the ability to express themselves. So tattoos, hairstyles, all this stuff they shouldn't have. This fucking nonsense.
Do they all look like Jango Fett?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, at least there's consistency there.
But the guy that voices them has such a... Because you have Wrecker, who's like a foot taller and broader than the rest of them. So there's... differences build-wise. You have Crosshair, the skinny sniper, and he gives them all different voices, so it's the three punks recognize talent when they see it.
The thing is, if he's playing four characters, I hope he gets paid 4 times.
You would hope so, but it's Disney.
Yeah, he's probably not paid at all.
Gets paid half then.
And probably should mention, I've been jumping on with Ian at Cult Connections. to cover them on a fortnightly basis, so everybody should listen there. More detail.
That's another podcast he's on.
It's another podcast.
Telling you.
Yeah.
I'm HIV positive of the indie podcast saying wrap
hell.
Up. Biggie's not here this week.
I was going to say someone's picking up the slack. Oh, wow.
Hold my slack.
Great. So is that your two things?
I have a pile of things. You can keep going if you want, but, you know, whatever. Helldivers 2. I'd like to talk about it, but it's been 3 fucking days. I haven't had a good game yet. Cons.
I bought it this week as well. I've only played it with Gadget. Played it with a random.
Mm-hmm.
We finished a mission. Played it with Gadget. We had a good time. Apart from when I got, as we were trying to evacuate, I got stuck on the ramp.
You did.
Like, literally, I got like caught on the ramp and I can't move. Got killed and then the ship just took off. So we didn't get our
I've seen this happen a couple of times.
Yeah.
There's been a few interesting extraction moments I've had recently. there was one I was playing with Sambone and Joe from Hallmark of Greatness. And Joe got killed by the pelican as it landed, but all his stuff landed underneath. I was trying to get the samples that he dropped, and I ended up actually triggering the end of the mission. So he was furious.
I had one game, the mechs have recently been introduced.
Yeah, they're fun.
And a lad huffed into his mech. There were bugs around his face, and he shot a rocket at them, killing the bugs, himself, and the two lads beside him.
Nice.
So the pelican had landed and I was there trying to revive the three of them, and I said, I should just leave them behind, fuck this.
I tried on my ally, and graphically it's fine, it runs at about 25 frames per second. Mm. And it's like nah, I just thought I'd give it a go to see what it looked like, but I don't think I'll be bothered playing it on a handheld at all.
That's near a mouse and a keyboard.
A shame
first.
It would be a nice one.
Controller,
I can't use mouse and keyboard. I try. I'm not fast enough with it. Like, yeah, the mouse and the aiming is faster, but it's all the other hand movements. Like, I used to be great with it. When I used to play Counter-Strike, I used to be able to choose my weapons, everything, without even looking. I'd be like, bang, 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 bang.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these days, I cannot figure out where my keys are quick enough.
But I think it feels less immersive as well, like, especially if it's a shooting game. You know, you're pulling a trigger when it's a controller. You're not, like, clicking a mouse and using your left hand. And yeah, I'm not a fan of
the full Time Crisis rig. Ready to go for it.
I had the Namco Gun Con when I was a kid. That was fucking banging.
Yeah, same. But I've got an Elite controller, so I've attached some of the like flaps at the back to certain buttons and stuff. So that's kind of helping.
Flaps. But yes,
anything else?
What more do you fucking want?
I don't know. I'm just asking.
Do you want blood? Well, I go get a knife. I'll cut myself open.
You bleed blue, PlayStation blue.
Sony
I'm just asking
life.
Before I move on to the next person, so you don't feel offended.
Oh, very good hosting duties. Off. Thank you. No, yes. I am all done. I have not done any more this week. I am sorry, Stig. I will be better next time.
You hope so, slacker. Unlike me, I've watched seven films this week. Seven films I've watched this week. So which one should I talk about? I'll talk about two of them that I actually really loved. So,
and the rest were shite.
No, the rest were really good. I'm fine. They were good to fine, but these two are particularly great.
And did you watch these at home, or are you really abusing your wife's workplace?
No, these ones were at home. I did want to see these at the cinema, but I never managed to get there. So I
just wanted to check.
But I did. Me and Kate did want to watch this. First one was Poor Things. We did want to watch that at the cinema. We just never got a chance to kind of watch
Poor Things is mine.
Oh, well, you can... I'll let you lead the way.
Should I take it away?
You take it away and I'll talk about my other film afterwards.
Yeah, so I watched this because obviously it's an Oscar nominee and I haven't really, with the exception of Barbie and Oppenheimer, I haven't watched that many that are Oscar worthy, shall we say. So I thought, well, I better catch up on this. I heard this was weird. Yes, it is weird. Without being too spoilery, Emma Stone is a character who is, she dies at the beginning, and what we'll call a mad scientist in Willem Dafoe brings her back to life, but having put a baby's brain into the body. So basically it's the brain of a baby, newborn baby in a 20-something-year-old's body. And it's kind of like a Frankenstein slash coming of age slash awakening of sexuality drama. Of course, like when she's
sorry,
sort of,
who, what?
Yeah. All of those.
That poses some questions, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, no, we'll get into that, don't worry.
Okay. Yes.
Or Stig's already to defend the pedophilia. Just set your ground, wait for it. Mental pedophilia, sorry.
Yeah, it's kind of a grey ground, but that's not really the point of the film. The point of the film is a question of her free will. It's whether she's being taken advantage of by several different men until she gets to the point in her own intelligence where she can make her own decision. She knows enough about life where she can then completely emasculates these guys, makes them completely daft. And it's kind of a journey of awakening. It is very, it's not what I expected. There is a lot of kind of crassness to it. It does make you feel extremely uncomfortable, especially sort of in the first maybe sort of quarter of the film. Like the first part of the film is in black and white. And I think, I don't know what the creative decision was behind that, but I think it's because babies, they see in black and white, don't they?
I think so it's all due to the fact that first half an hour, 40 minutes, is that she is a child. Her brain is still developing as a child.
Yeah.
She may look like a woman, but her brain isn't. And the way she talks and the way she acts and the way she interacts with things is very much like a child.
How quickly does the brain develop when it's in an adult body?
Well, it's mentioned that it has accelerated somewhat, but then that's a baby's brain, isn't it? They have accelerated learning, along with accelerated hair growth as well, apparently. This is a film that I appreciated. I didn't necessarily like it. It wasn't necessarily my cup of tea. It looked stunning. It's a completely sort of fantasy looking, almost a bit steampunk setting. But I can understand why it's up for an Oscar, but it wasn't quite, it wasn't really to my taste.
Is it a comedy? Because I've seen it like advertised as a comedy.
I wouldn't say it's a comedy. I haven't seen.
I laughed my ass off through this film. I thought it was hilarious. It
depends on how dark humoured you are.
Yeah, I mean, there was one moment that absolutely got me, and it's for me, the film took off when Mark Ruffalo enters, which is probably about a third of the way into the film, when the film becomes in colour as well rather than black and white. And this is when she's just starting to learn enough about the world that she's making her own decisions. And the Willem Dafoe's character, he's not oppressive. She has her own free will. I can't say what she can and can't do. She's free to go if she wants, because she wanted to go off, have this adventure like a little girl. This man's taking her away on this great adventure, and she's like, yeah, I want to go. And yeah, rather than oppressing her decision, Willem Dafoe's like, well, I'm not happy about it, but we're going to be here if we're here if you need us, kind of thing. Sends her off with some money and like, go experience the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Ruffalo's character, kind of, he's got the gift of the gab. He's completely charming, completely pompous, upper class dickhead.
Yeah, he's so
he's so good, but she doesn't see it. She's naive, just like all young. You guys have never been a teenage girl, as far as I'm aware. You do get blinded by the charismatic people, and when you get a little bit older, you know, when you get to your sort of late 20s, you realize actually these people are just buffoons. I don't need to put up with this. And so, like, seeing that on screen, it's like, yep, yeah, we've all actually been through this. Like, we've been dazzled by the right words and everything, and you can turn it around and just completely, like, by the end of it, his character is a complete, he's the one that's a child, he's acting like a, you know, a teenager, he's throwing tantrums. So
yeah, I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. I don't get on with all of Yorgos Lanthimos's films. I didn't like The Lobster at all. I did like The Favourite, but this, I thought Emma Stone was fantastic. I love the character of Bella Baxter. So that first 40 minutes or so in black and white is very much a child in a woman's body and them kind of studying her. And yes, it does feel very problematic, especially when one of the guys who's studying her falls in love with her. And it's like a bit like, mate, I know she looks like Emma Stone, but her mental capacity in her brain, it's a child. Then she obviously has this awakening. She starts to grow up. She starts to find her own sexuality. And that's kind of, that's when it turns into color. And that's when it's, she's a woman at that point. It's very accelerated. So once it goes into color and it kind of becomes a woman, it's fine. She starts to discover herself and learn about the world. And she becomes quite philosophical in her thinking. And she, her put downs are incredible. And yeah, she comes up with terms such as furious jumping for sex, which there's a lot of sex in this film. Do not watch this with your parents or your grandmother.
See, I don't know. That still kind of makes me feel more uncomfortable about it. It's the idea that she's coming up with a term. It's almost like infantilizing the concept of sex.
Yeah.
If she's calling it somebody furious jumping, that just, there's a bit that just makes a little bit in the back of my head go, no.
I don't know. I just found it really funny. I thought it looked beautiful. Aesthetically, it's amazing. The sets are great. The music is great. She's really funny.
Yeah, I'm sure it is funny, but you say it's just that seems off to me.
It's just, yeah, that picture you're building whole, in your head. I think I'm somewhere similar.
Yeah, but the whole film is off like that. No one talks properly in this film. Like, it's set in this kind of Victorian era, but everything is lavish and there's like flying machines and shit. Like, it's not real the way people talk and the way people act in this film aren't real.
No, I completely get that, and I've seen like enough like trailers and clips of it to understand. Like, I know it's got that kind of steampunk fantasy aesthetic to it, and I get that it's offbeat and weird and all that. But I don't know. Maybe I haven't seen the film, but just that description of what the subject matter is and how it gets there feels a bit much for me, I think.
That's what it made me feel. It made me feel uncomfortable.
That's enough to turn me off the film, I think.
That anime thing of the 3,000-year-old goddess in the body of a 10-year-old. It's just that, but reversed.
I thought it was great.
I mean, fair enough, not impinging on your enjoyment of it. It's just the description does not help it for me.
Working on myself to get happiness is a great way to say masturbation.
Yeah, all I'm saying. Well, the film never kind of, it never looks down on her for her sexual kind of adventures as well. Like, she never forces her to apologize for anything.
Well, it's an interesting idea encapsulating like sexual growth into the space of a movie. Anyway, it's a very short window for a lot of development, a lot of different feelings. But it's probably just a hard one to describe. As a gadget, must be in the same boat when you're picturing something in your head.
Yeah.
This is creepy as fuck.
It does. There's
some moments, especially in the beginning of the film, that were like repulsive to watch as well. Mm-hmm. Not in a sexual way, but just some like.
Really she has kind shot. Of. A,
no, she also does have a bit of a cruel streak, like kids do to begin with, and she hadn't learnt the social norms and politeness, and just hard to. She's just got no inhibitions. Just doesn't know what the difference between right and wrong. Like, kids don't.
Oh no.
I mean, but it's hard. It's hard to watch. Yeah, it's hard to watch when it's an adult doing it.
Yeah, must be quite the disconnect seeing childlike behavior in a full grown adult.
Yeah, that's also Disney something Plus, that's weird, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I watched it on Amazon.
I think I've seen it advertised. I must keep an eye out.
That's on Disney Plus.
Oh yes, that one I subscribe to.
Yeah,
you watch a Bad Batch.
It's a Searchlight film, so Disney on them, so it's on there. Well, I will talk about the other film that I watched this week that I absolutely loved then, which has been snubbed by the Oscars.
Snubbed
by the BAFTAs, which is absolutely fucking ridiculous. All of Us Strangers. This is a film by director Andrew Hay. It stars Andrew Scott, Paul Mescal, Jamie Bell and Claire Foy. And Poor Things was my second favourite film of the year. Then a few days later, I watched this. And this is one of the best films I've seen in the last several years. I fucking loved it. So the story is of this writer who, I forget his name, I'm sorry.
Adam.
The story is of Adam, who lives in a London tower block by himself, and he is very lonely. He's dealing with the trauma of the loss of his parents when he was 12, the grief behind all that, the trauma of he's a lonely homosexual man, and it's kind of dealing with the fact that he never obviously got to tell his parents and come out to them and anything like that. And he is one night he's visited by one of his neighbors, Harry, who is also gay, and he comes to the door with whiskey and he says, "Fancy a drink? I've seen you. You've seen you watching me before. Like, could do with a drink. Do you fancy having a drink?" And Adam rebuffs him. Cut to a few days later, and he decides to go to his where he grew up. And while he's there, he sees his parents, who played by Jamie Bell and Claire Foy, but as the age of they were when they died.
Right.
So he is his age, they are their age, and he goes back to his childhood home, and he starts to kind of live with them and speak with them and have conversations with them, and but not in a way that he's transported back into a 12-year-old boy. He is who he is now, and he starts to tell his mother about, and he comes out to his mother, and his mother, obviously, she died when he was a lot younger, so her attitude towards gay people back then is probably very different than it would have been as she got older. So he's kind of dealing with all that inside of his head, and with all this, he ends up actually deciding to meet up with Harry, and he forms a relationship with him, so him and Harry have a relationship. This film fucking broke me big time. It's absolutely beautiful, heart-wrenching. The themes, the script, the performances, the music, the cinematography, everything about it is perfect. Andrew Scott, I cannot understand how, even the BAFTAs, right? I can maybe understand the Oscars maybe kind of ignoring this, but as it's a British film with Irish actors, I would have thought that the BAFTAs might have at least picked up on it. Mm-hmm. They seem to have ignored it. He is fucking incredible in this. It is the best thing I've ever seen him in. Paul Mescal is also great in it, and the whole cast is, to be honest.
Andrew Scott's a goddamn treasure. Like, I fucking love him.
Honestly, this is the best thing I've ever seen him do.
Like, well, if the worst thing I've ever seen him do is be camp as fucking Sherlock, he's doing something really good.
But it's, the film is so sad. Like, it explores themes of loneliness, trauma, grief, homosexuality. It's that's all that encased within this and their stories they talk to each other about, and him having this kind of weird meeting his parents' ghosts. In essence, and all that wrapped up and the kind of grief he's going through, that he still clearly hasn't got over this death of his parents. That's all sad enough, isn't it? But the last 10 minutes of this film, like, I fucking wept like a fucking baby the last 10 minutes of this film, and I was feeling very numb after the credits finished rolling. It's so good. And Kate didn't watch it with me. She kind of knew what had happened because someone at work had spoiled it for her. And I said, well, I started talking to her about it and telling her what the story was. And I almost started welling up again, just telling her about what went on. Honestly, if you love cinema, like, this is up there with like one of the best films I've seen in so long. It's absolutely amazing. And I've actually been reading a few different theories on what the film is about and what the ending's about, and a lot of it makes sense. Like, there's various different ways you can interpret this film if you want. But honestly, yeah, watch this film. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those ones that's more important what you take away from it rather than what they're giving to you.
Yeah, definitely.
And like, looking at reviews, it's glowing left, right, and centre.
Mm-hmm. Like, it could be very traumatic and very triggering for a lot of people, especially people who maybe lost their parents or, you know, or gay people that came out and how their parents reacted to them and the struggles they've had with loneliness. Like, it's very triggering for all of that. But the way it explores all those themes is just amazing.
And notorious homophobes, are we okay to watch it?
Yeah.
Oh, we can't.
Yeah, apart from maybe like the gay sex scenes and all that.
What?
just looked up at what awards Andrew Scott had been nominated for or won. He has won a grand total of one BAFTA award and two Olivier awards. That's all the recognition he's had from major places.
BAFTA's not recognising this and nominating it. It baffles me.
The BAFTA he did get was best actor in a supporting role for Sherlock back in 2012. Mm. 12 years ago.
Well, I already know an award he's going to win this year.
Ooh.
Because had we done it tonight, spoilers, we would have got one.
Fair enough.
Yeah, All of Us Strangers. Everyone should watch it. One more quick mention of, I watched American Fiction this week, which is obviously another film that's up for Best Film and got a lot of nominations.
I really want to see this.
Jeffrey Wright is up for Best Actor. Sterling K. Brown's up for Best Supporting Actor. This is story of Thelonious Monk Ellison, who is a writer. He's a black writer, but the things he writes about isn't about black culture. And he's struggling to sell his book. And then he decides to write a black story of the hood and the troubles of gangs and everything. And he writes it in such a way that it's just like, it's clearly taking the piss. But all of a sudden, it starts to take off and everyone starts to love it, especially white people. There's a lot of jokes about white people saying that black voices should be heard. And the black man who's wrote it, they've been like, like, this is all on the nose. It's very good. It's funny. I think it thinks it's a bit more clever than I thought it actually is. I do think it loses its steam a little bit, two thirds of the way in or so. All the performances are fine, but when I kind of look at the last film with Andrew Scott, Paul Mescal, and them not getting nominated, their performances for me were a lot better than some of the ones from this film and other films that have been nominated. I enjoyed this film. I don't know if it's awards worthy, personally.
I mean, do you think it's actually going to win anything? The stuff it's up against,
it might win
tough.
Adapted screenplay, but I don't think it's going to win any of like the big awards, like the film director and actors or anything.
I mean, in adapted screenplay, it's going to be up against some big ones as well.
Yeah, that's the only thing I think it has a shot of actually winning. But it was fine. It was enjoyable. But it wasn't like out of the 10 nominated films, I would have put this at like number 8 for me.
And then you would have got shouted out on TikTok again.
Yeah. No, that's because I put Barbie too high. So yeah, that's the three things that I did this week. Gadget, round us off.
Okay, so a couple of quick ones. I finished Children of Time by Adrian Tchaikovsky today. It's up there, one of the best sci-fi books I've ever read. It's really, really fucking good. And the way it ends is not how I expected it to end, and in a kind of good way. Excuse me. No, it's a phenomenal book. I don't want to talk about like any of the plot points beyond where I talked about last time, because that'll just be spoilery as fuck. But Jesus Christ, if you like sci-fi, read it. It's so good.
I started it. I've got it on. I got it on Audible. I need to crack on. I kind of drifted away from it a little bit.
Get on it. It's
yeah.
It's a slow burn at the start, but when shit starts kicking off, it's so good. I also, the FOMO hit me really hard, and so I restarted a Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's all your fucking chatter about Rebirth.
Yes.
You bastards. So I've now, in the space of a week, despite the amount of Helldivers I've played, I've managed to get up to the Haunted Train Yard.
Oh, that's so much better than it is in the... Well, not better, but it's so more expanded, isn't it, the Train Yard?
Well, I don't know. I just started that bit. That's where I'm up to.
Yeah.
That's
great. The thing is as well, like, it's... You've got Rebirth to look forward to, because already I think Rebirth's better.
Excellent. Well, I will say there's been some bits of it I haven't enjoyed as much. Like, some of the linearity stuff... The linear bits of it just kind of a bit boring. I didn't really enjoy the Sector 5 slums apart from when you get to Aerith's house. But then I really enjoyed Wall Market. I thought that was a really fun part of the game. And the fact that they kept in Don Corneo, that whole section was just fucking brilliant. That was
they
so funny.
They
that
had to.
Funny.
They
was so funny. It was Cloud and his dress and his little dainty walk. It was just so funny. I was just killing myself laughing throughout the whole thing. But also they made Don Corneo just as slimy and horrible and cartoony as he had to be.
Mm.
So yeah.
Do you know what I like about the series as well is they haven't made Tifa and Aerith love rivals. They haven't made them kind of bitchy. Like they're really good friends.
Oh yeah, they're absolutely BFFs at the point that I'm at in the game.
Yeah,
and they've known each other for about 2 hours.
Yeah,
but I also just enjoy the kind of the way the combat system works. The it's kind of free form, but you can do active time battle. But then you know you can choose who you're fighting as for the best thing. Yeah, no, I really enjoy it. I'm glad I've gone back into it. So I'm going to finish that and get the intermission DLC done as well. Yeah. But the main thing I'm going to talk about is because there was the news that they were going to make a TV series about this come out a couple of weeks ago. So now that I've finished Children of Time, I decided to go back into this, the palate cleanser, before I do the second Children of Time book. I've restarted reading, because I've read it about 3 times already, Neuromancer by William Gibson, which is the progenitor of the cyberpunk genre. It was written in 1984, and it was his debut novel. He'd done some short stories beforehand, for instance, you know, Johnny Mnemonic. That was a William Gibson. Also things like Burning Chrome, which he'd kind of ripped off from Escape from New York for some reason. I don't know how he managed to get that to there, but all right. But this tells the story of Henry Dorset Case, a low-level hustler in the underworld of Chiba City, Japan, affectionately known, Candy, as Night City.
Yes.
The character is once a talented computer hacker or a console cowboy, as the book calls it. He was caught stealing from his employer, and as a punishment, his central nervous system was damaged, leaving him unable to access the virtual reality data space called The Matrix. He's then approached by a mercenary and told, "One more job and we can fix you." That kind of thing. He's got to steal something else from the corpse. It's the definitive cyberpunk novel. Like there's been one since, like Snow Crash, which have kind of expanded on some of the ideas from this one. But this is where a lot of it originated from. William Gibson was William Gibson was afraid that this wasn't going to take off because he was writing it as Blade Runner came out. And he thought everyone's going to think, well, I've just ripped off Blade Runner. and he wrote it in the space of a year because he was commissioned this. This was a commission, his first for a debut novel for a science fiction magazine. And he crammed it out in a year. But the writing style of it is fucking brilliant. And I've just found the first couple of paragraphs of the first chapter. Seriously, the way this is written, you can see where Cyberpunk 2077 gets it all. So this is the first couple of paragraphs. The sky above the port was the colour of television, turned to a dead channel. "It's not like I'm using," Case heard someone say as he shouldered his way through the crowd to the door of the chat. "It's like my body's developed this massive drug deficiency." It was a sprawl voice and a sprawl joke. The Chatsubo was a bar for professional expatriates. You could drink there for a week and never hear 2 words of Japanese. Rats was tending bar, his prosthetic arm jerking monotonously as he filled a tray of glasses with draft Kirin. He saw Case and smiled, his teeth a webwork of East European steel and brown decay. Case found a place at the bar between the unlikely tan on one of Lonnie Zone's whores and the crisp naval uniform of a tall African whose cheekbones were rich with precise rows of tribal scars. And then there's a bit of dialogue, which I don't want to spoil because it kind of sets up some things. But then you get the Case shrugged. The girl to his right giggled and nudged him. The bartender's smile widened. This is my favorite fucking line in the whole book. His ugliness was the stuff of legend. In an age of affordable beauty, there was something heraldic about the lack of it. The antique arm whined as he reached for another mug. It was a Russian military prosthesis, a 7-function force feedback manipulator cased in grubby pink plastic. Like, that's the standard of the writing. That's the style of it. And, like, you look into the way the dialogue goes. One of the lines that I skipped over there was, "Wage was in here early with 2 Joe boys. Like, you know, it's all the stuff that Cyberpunk 2077 and the Cyberpunk TTRPG took from. Like, this idea, you know, this idea of this weird slang that you get of combining different languages together.
Nod sat from Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, it's very much like that. And it's an absolute classic book that I think a lot of sci-fi fans read in the kind of 90s and early 2000s. And since The Matrix came out, I think it's fallen out of favor, but like people don't read this one as much. They do a lot more of the 90s sci-fi and like the stuff that this influenced. I mean, the whole concept of The Matrix came from this book, you know?
Mm-hmm. I read this after The Matrix. There was kind of a resurgence. It came back into bookshops locally. They must have reprinted it around that time as well.
Yeah.
I think it had a game as well.
Yeah, there was a... I think there was a point-and-click game for it, I think.
I had the Commodore 64 episode I did. I think this is one of them. It might have been Interplay.
Yeah, video game adaptation of the novel was published in 1988 by Interplay.
Yeah. Did Wasteland and everything.
Yep. The way William Gibson describes things is wonderful. Like the a lot of the book is based around the idea of the sprawl, which is this just urban center that crosses the entire United States. It's like mental, the concepts that he's putting there, because this is like looking at Arthur C. Clarke. Like in 2001 Space Odyssey, the novel, not the film, Arthur C. Clarke basically describes the iPad. In Neuromancer, like William Gibson has taken this idea of connected computing and transhumanism into a place that no one's really thought about at that point. So it's absolutely, if you enjoyed Cyberpunk 2077 or you like kind of weird or offbeat sci-fi, it's absolutely worth reading, because even just the visuals are fantastic. And I'm actually listening to it on Audible while I do things. The Audible version is read by Jason Fleming, of all people. Turns out he can't do an Australian accent, but he'll try it anyway.
I had no idea this was a series. I must pick this up again.
Oh, yeah. I think there's four books, I want to say. Three or four, definitely.
This has been over 20 years. It's about time for a reread.
absolutely. And, you know, there was that news that they're going to make a TV series about it with Robert Pattinson as Case, which I'm entirely fucking into. That's hopefully going to be awesome. So yeah, it's been a few years since I've read Neuromancer, and it's been a longer time since I read the sequels. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm just going to go through the series.
Good show.
Yeah, great books.
Excellent. So that's us all for the week.
Yes.
Done. As ever.
Well, we have feedback.
We do have feedback. You're right.
Yeah, you're forgetting the format.
I am forgetting the format.
Skip forward. Well done.
Yeah. Trying to end it quicker, wasn't that? That's why.
No. Kieran's been on. Hello, modern escapeanistas. I watched Dune Part 1 this week and loved it. And following the thoughts and impressions of last week's episode, I'm pumped to see Part 2. But that's not what I'm writing about. You'll see Part 2. Do it. Just do it. He says, I've officially upgraded my nerd status by having my first game of Warhammer 40,000 this weekend, and I have to say it was brilliant. If you love rules, tape measures, and occasionally having to roll upwards of 20 dice at once, this might be the game for you. My mighty Ultramarines managed to destroy the Black Templars in a mere span of 4 hours and 6 beers. We'll ignore the fact that playing a game with armies twice the size of what we fielded should take, quote, up to 2 hours, but fuck off while learning. I can't help but draw comparisons to Dungeons & Dragons, as 40K is a tabletop game that's heavily based on dice rolls and rules. Quote, shout out to Gadget as a brilliant DM. Book him to DM your D&D games. Yes, please do. I need the money. So if you're into that side of D&D, then maybe you'd be into 40K. I also have extreme FOMO for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, especially after Oodles' impression of it last week, so I'm replaying Final Fantasy VII Remake on my Steam Deck and having a lovely old time.
Yeah, don't worry about Rebirth. Load of shite.
Until it comes to Xbox, then it's best game ever.
Oh, of course. You know how it works.
I know how it works.
DM Pass.
I haven't played 40K in years. Like I last played it when I was a teenager. I would caution the comparison to D&D only simply because you don't really role play it. It's a war game. Mm. Like there isn't the role play aspect of it. It's just the battle aspect to it. So, but if all you play D&D for is the combat, then yeah, go for it.
Lovely figurines, though. Does he get to play with those?
Yeah, he gets to play with the lovely figurines. He has to paint them himself as well.
That's all part of the charm. I love that.
Yeah, and to get charged for fortune for them. I don't know why people
think about it later on. You've something to leave to your family in your will. Take my wave of orcs or mechanized whatever in 40k.
I wonder if you just buy a 3D printer and just like pirate Warhammer.
Would I that think work? They're quite hot on it because I've looked at that myself.
Just make your own classes and families, yeah. And yeah, that's great. Thunder cunts. Yeah.
Yeah.
The fucking no weakness. Destroy everything.
They've got 9,000 HP.
7 willies.
Lee Davies has said, I recently restarted Bloodborne as I never finished it in 2015 due to a corrupted save file. I'm finally past the area I got up to originally. I'm halfway through the Forbidden Forest. I really love this game and now I'm more experienced in the genre. Having finished Elden Ring, I'm having a much easier time of it. I'm hoping to have it finished by the end of the month as I want to pick up Dragon's Dogma. I forgot Dragon's Dogma was the end of the month. God fucking damn it!
At least you can create your character now, get a head start.
No, because that's like a fucking 15-hour endeavour in itself.
Exactly, get the character so get it ready.
Get it out of the way.
I love that character creation. It looks amazing. You could do like every individual teeth.
Yeah.
Teeth, tooth. It's great.
Teeths.
Teeths.
But yes, Bloodborne's excellent game. One of my favourites of all time.
Never done the DLC. Really must boot it up again.
The problem with booting it up now, though, is that it's locked at like under 30 frames a second. It's like, if you played Elden Ring, it's like, no, this ain't it. It's hard to play. It's a bit slideshowy in places.
The fuck cares about frames? Grow up.
I care about frames. Next up is the former Mr. Worldwide himself, Planty. Right now, so Planty texts me his feedback every week. He doesn't submit it in like the usual places.
Planty special.
Yeah, because he can't be asked. But I'm just going to read the text out verbatim. Ah, damn it. I'm late. L, sorry, but I'm in London nomming all the food at the Ivy Asia, yeah? Watch Extraordinary on Disney Plus. Story of a girl with no powers in a London where everyone has powers. She also has a cat called Jizz Lord, which makes Colin Robinson sound like a pedestrian name for a cat. Namaste, bitches.
That looks quite funny. I might watch that.
Watched that. I started the second series. I think it released this week. But I'm only like an episode or two deep.
I've heard good things.
Irish lead. Fantastic series.
Right, okay.
Well, off then.
Take a drink for this one because this is a Xenos essay.
Send it to me. I can kind of skim through it.
Okay. Hope you're all okay and whatever has delayed the biggies night isn't serious. I mean, it is
Ebola.
Serious.
He shot himself inside out.
Mm.
Puddles of oodles.
It's worse. It's cancer Ebola. He's riddled with Ebola from the top to the bottom.
Oh, the worst. Literally the bottom.
But
Rip started like a chainsaw.
But
the
another
colon's not going back up. It'll just have to come out.
It gives me another week to prepare my nominations, so that's welcome nevertheless. So, for this week's feedback, I've been playing more Elden Ring, and the new thing I have for this week is The Last Epoch. I mentioned this last week, and I think I played enough of it now to assess it properly. This is an ARPG by 11th Hour Games. Great name for a company, apparently. And avoiding repeating everything I mentioned last week, it's proven to be really solid so far. You don't get to customize your character when you make them. Rogues and Acolytes are female, Primalists and Mages and Sentinels are male, appearance under your gear is fixed, but build customization is incredibly in-depth. Every character has a passive ability tree that you can unlock as you level to define the playstyle even before you start deciding on what skills you want to use. Every skill also has its own upgrade web, which you get 20 points to invest in a skill when a skill is leveled up fully, though you can only invest in 5 skills, with plenty of ways to totally change how something behaves. You also get a mastery selection, which is functionally a subclass. Using the Sentinel as an example, you start out a pretty bog-standard warrior type. That's the end of that sentence. I thought that was running on there. At the end of Act 2, about 5 hours in, you get your mastery choice, which then locks in for the rest of the game. You can respec everything else at will, but the masteries are irreversible. And as a Sentinel, you can either become a Paladin, you know what a Paladin is, a Forge Guard, something like an Artificer, making minions which are copies of your own weapons and armor to form a personal army in combat, or Void Knight, edgy bastard with a big smashy weapon that makes holes in reality with magic that can literally delete enemies. I want that one. I picked Void Knight at the moment, and at the moment I can hit things for 15 times my own max HP, which is exactly what I want from the class. If Diablo 4 insulted your intelligence and Path of Exile gave you choice paralysis, this is a well-made fantasy ARPG that doesn't expect you to have a degree in theoretical game design to set up a build, and also doesn't keep asking if you want to put another coin in the slot machine every time you get back to town. There are microtransactions, but the devs have said they don't intend for anything other than cosmetics to appear in there. We'll see if that holds up in the future, but so far they're taken seriously. If nothing else, their pricing for their premium currency is actually set up so humans can understand it, and the qualities that you can buy actually line up with the amounts you can spend, keeping the predatory aspects of those well away from the game. I respect that, and I hope they stick to it. One last thing, if Gadget is on tonight's show, I want to mention there is a new flavour of Tango showing up in shops in my area, which I'd like him to read out. Oh, fuck off. Are you ready for this?
Specifically, are you ready for this?
Bam, bam, bam. No. Specifically, Mango Tango. Mango Tango, mate. I hope you're happy.
I'm going to text Pip and tell her to say that one to you.
Mango Tango. I mean, Last Epoch sounds great. That's a lot of information to take in all at once. But thank you for that, Zemos.
That's a load of bollocks.
All right. I think with Last Epoch, like, I've seen a fair bit about it. Like, because I really wanted Diablo 4 to be good, but then Activisioned it.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, Blizzarded it. Either way, it shat the bed. An ARPG like that is something I've been looking for a long time. So this might scratch that itch if I ever get round to it. But last up, we have Angry Kurt. He's in your field here, Punk. This week I started Lost Judgment. Of the three Yakuza games I've played, in Zero, Like a Dragon, and Judgment, Judgment was my favourite of the three. And maybe controversially, I preferred Yagami to Kiryu. Thoughts?
What a load of bollocks.
Don't get me wrong, I love the Yakuza stories and characters, but for me, Judgment was better because the story was less about Yakuza politics, but about a detective story, which I just prefer and also find it easier to follow. So I was always interested in Lost Judgment, but it had been in my backlog for a while. A few hours in and it's great. The story has me as hooked as the first games with its high school-based mystery, but then you get to beat up, and I quote, delinquent students. And I think combat is much improved from both Zero and Judgment 1. Yagami is still my boy and still so satisfying to pull off some hilarious finisher moves. I'm looking forward to playing more. TV-wise, I started Shogun, which is good, but I don't feel like I'm intelligent enough to always track what's happening, so I have to rely on episode recaps, and I also finished What If Season 2 for Neverwatchers.
Still haven't watched that.
I didn't get on with the Judgment games. I think it was because of Yagami. The man's got great hair and great jeans, but that's about it for me.
I think for anybody that doesn't want to delve into the full Yakuza series, it's a great jumping on point. And yeah, I like the detective stuff too. Yes, attorney reference in the first one. I adore that. But any other game you play, I miss that wall jumping combat.
Yeah.
So I always forget, Kiryu can't jump off walls. You bollocks. You can pick up bicycles and put them through a wall, but jumping off them.
Yeah, Kiryu's feet are stuck to the ground.
Yeah, very much so. But I love Judgment 1. Lost Judgment lost me. The side missions. Normally when you start a side mission or side game on Yakuza, you knuckle in and you finish it to completion, then you move on to another one. Like the management one you would have done in Like a Dragon.
Yes.
They're gated behind chapter progression.
Oh, so you've got to keep track of things.
Yeah, so there's a boxing one that I really enjoyed, got into it, and then I think I had two boxers that I just had to fight, and that would have been it completed, but they didn't unlock until chapter 10, 12. The vinegar strokes of the game, and by that stage, you're focused on the main story. So by the time everything unlocked, it's like, no, I'm too invested, I want to finish this, and then there's no free play afterwards.
When I get to Animal Crossing Island in Infinite Wealth, I'll just be focused on that until it's done.
Well, that's what I did. 4 o'clock mornings. So. Do I stay up for 2 hours and go to work or try to get some save? Sophie's choice.
Because I remember I didn't get into the business sim in Zero, which meant I didn't have anywhere near enough money to level up Kiryu to the top.
The skill trees.
And I struggled to finish that game.
You would do, yeah.
I managed it, but it nearly snapped a few controllers. So, but yeah, I'm happy for you, Kurt, that you're enjoying Lost Judgment.
Definitely. If a game clicks with you, hold on to it.
Infinite Wealth is excellent, though. That's definitely a good place to go.
RPG excellent. Of the year.
Is that everything?
That is everything.
Great. What did he say now? All of our, look, check out our show notes, all that crap.
Yeah, all that.
Yeah. Head to modernescapism.co.uk for everything that we do. Yeah. It's a good website. I designed that website. More people should go look at our website. You what?
What's that?
What'd you say?
Did I mumble? I said it's a load of bollocks. I think I've said it a few times tonight. You should be ashamed.
Well, what's your website? Youcunts.co.uk.
It is. Youcunts.co.uk.
And who came up with that?
I can't remember. I was drunk when I got it. Don't worry. Website Every team. Time I think Youcunts, I think of you, Stig.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not hand even a website, though. It's just a re-divert to his link tree. Cheater.
What more do you need? I have more than one podcast. I have to spread it out a bit.
Yeah, they're your websites to check out. Everything we do, obviously, on Patreon. We've got the, how do we say this? Modern Escapism.
Fuck's sake. What a load of bollocks. With an fun, X. Though.
Yeah. That'll be coming in April. You should get Fast X soon.
Well, if Biggie's recovered from his Ebola cancer.
Yeah, he will be. He'll get through it. And then he'll have another illness after watching that film.
A hernia to add on top of it.
To be honest, not going to lie, we don't know if the Biggie's in next week because Biggie's birthday is his 50th birthday next week. Sorry, Biggie, just dropped it in there.
Biggie's big bash.
He's away most of the weekend, so if we can't record Friday night, then...
The Biggies, have to be at the end of the month, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, so, holding your hands up. Fantastic in podcast form.
We have a video format, so...
Fuck, I forgot about that.
But yeah, it all should depends on Biggie, off. Who is currently ill and hasn't replied to my text messages, so I blame everything on him. But for now, that's everything apart from Candyland.
And now... What's up in Candyland?
Well, speaking of bollocks, I've come up with a synopsis for The Unknown. Here we go, then.
Oh, he's going to be furious that he's not here.
There we go. Right. In the heart of an urban sprawl, the forgotten district of Ashenbrook harbours the dilapidated ruins of the once grand Ashcroft chocolate factory. Within its crumbling walls, the legend of the malevolent chocolatier known as the Unknown festers like a disease, drawing in those who dare to seek its dark secrets. A group of thrill-seeking friends, led by the daring Alex, ventures into the abandoned factory in search of adrenaline-fueled excitement. Unbeknownst to them, they stumble upon a labyrinth of horrors where the Unknown's grotesque experiments still echo through the corridors. As they delve deeper into the bowels of the factory, they encounter the remnants of the Unknown's macabre creations, chocolates infused with the blood of his victims, each one a testament to its insatiable thirst for carnage.
Nice.
Among the grisly discoveries are vats filled with molten chocolate where the unfortunate souls were submerged alive, their screams forever trapped in the cursed walls. Cages littered with bones reveal the fate of those who dared to defy the Unknown's will, their bodies twisted and contorted into curly whirlies. But the true horror awaits them in the heart of the factory where the Unknown's Umpa laboratory lies dormant, teeming with unspeakable monstrosities. Here they find tables stained with blood and viscera, where victims were dissected in the name of experimentation. Chilling displays of human organs preserved in Turkish delight line the walls, a sickening testament to the Unknown's depravity. When the group finally discover the Unknown's nest, deep within the walls, they find human remains cocooned in caramel. Suddenly they realise one of them is still alive. In a feeble voice, they mutter the words, "Chew me." Trapped within its malevolent grasp, the group must confront the darkest depths of their own humanity as they struggle to survive the night. Ascensions mount and blood flows freely, alliances are tested and betrayals abound. With each passing moment, the unknowns grip tightens and the line between nightmare and reality begins to blur. Sounds good, doesn't it?
Are you Garth Marenghi?
Maybe.
Is this the plot to the horror film that they're making?
Yeah.
Have they commissioned you, Candy?
Yeah,
they can do. I'm open to it.
Let's get on it before they make it.
I nearly broke out in the giggles, and it was over the smallest part. It was known as the unknown.
That's why I'm asking if she's Garth Marenghi, because that's a Garth Marenghi line.
Oh, big time.
I'm nothing but an excellent writer.
You're a really good writer. You should write more. That was brilliant.
So, for Asylum Films, whoever's bought the rights to it, want to reach out, let's collab. Do it for 50 quid. You can have that.
Coming to Shudder in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
And it perfectly explains why Willy Wonka would choose to hire them in his factory, because he's an absolute mental case.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Great. That's it. That's Candyland. That's the podcast. Thank you very much for Punk to come on. I mean, you could plug your wares, but I know usually when people ask you that, you just tell them to get fucked. So
yeah, but if they don't offer, I also grill them over that too.
Yeah.
What, is my time worth that little to you?
Yeah, so...
We've already said your website address.
Yeah, exactly.
Several times. Give it up for free.
Yeah. So yeah, free. Thanks very
Fuck
much
you.
For coming
Where's
on
the Patreon money?
To fill in some space. And we'll be back next week with the biggies or not. We don't know. So... Check. You'll see next week when it comes out.
Bye. Oh, I love having no content plan.
An audible shrug.
Shrug. Say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
I want to hear you squeal.
We'll say that again, but slower.
For you, Miss Machine, anytime.